Let's do it.
Out to the right. 5 seconds to go in the first half. Dante fires deep to the left. Moss caught it at the 11, but now he pitches
look at
it.
This.
Williams! Touchdown!
You gotta be kidding me!
Episode of the Climbing the Pocket podcast. I am your host, Jason Brown, and our streak is over. Unfortunately, we don't have the full crew here this evening. Our man Miles is off being a responsible parent. Well, I guess not really like parent, but like puppy parent. I don't know if that's a thing. But Miles is at puppy classes this evening, so he won't be joining us today. I'm sure he'd much rather be here, but he's got to get Teddy to stop biting him on his arm all the time. So Miles will be there. So, you know, give him a shout out for being a responsible father, I guess. Is it father? I don't know how this works. I don't have pets like that. But I do still have the other guys here with me. So, JR, man, what's going on with you?
Everything's good, man. Another day closer to game day. So everything's good.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir. And the man, the myth, the sexy prince. How you doing, man? Have you put down that cup of tea yet? Or are you still sipping?
I'm still sipping, y'all. I am still sipping. All right. So just for clarification, for our listeners who don't know why I've been sipping tea. So probably about a month and a half ago on our inside our little group chat, I've been kind of banging the Case Keenum. Like, I think Case Keenum is playing for a starting role. I think he's going to get paid. All the guys are just like, nah, it ain't going to happen. He's going to be 30 years old. He's old and all that stuff. Case Keenum goes out last week, and he kind of balls out against Washington. He's balled out against Tampa Bay. He kind of saved the game in Chicago. He's had enough game tapes where he might convince one of these QB needy teams, hey, come play for us. And the funny thing is our boy Arif Hassan, I'll put an article today, coverage, and he kind of talked about that Case Keenum would probably be looking into that 17 to, you know, what is it? What do you say? 22 million range?
And I was something foolish like that. But, you know, I think I might be more upset with Arif about this whole thing because you've been blowing up our inbox, sipping tea all afternoon and into the evening. Than I am about him getting me blocked by Kyle Rudolph for merely laughing on Twitter.com.
Hey, the fellas thought I was crazy, but you know, all I expect from Keenum is that, you know, I sent 10% over the top, plus 5% in endorsements. I'm telling you guys, if he has another good game, just don't be surprised if the team puts, you know, I don't think that they should. But I just won't be surprised with the way that this league is.
Everybody getting fired.
Putting their hopes and dreams into Case Keenum.
But anyway, before we go too far down this rabbit hole of Yinka gloating about stuff I'm sure y'all really don't care that much about, let's get to this thing. We're talking about the man Case Keenum. And in what was probably the worst kept secret of all time and very possibly the most unnecessary gamesmanship ever, Mike Zimmer decided to end all of it, and Case Keenum was named the starter. So, you know, JR, obviously you're a resident quarterback. You know, what are your thoughts on this decision? Obviously, you know, he's well known. You're a Teddy Bridgewater guy, but what are your thoughts on Case as the starter? You said last podcast, you know, he's earned the right to be the starter for the team. And how does this change things for you as we kind of move forward in the season? Is Case the starter in your mind? Really until the end of the season? Is Case the starter until he struggles? Like, how do you really see this playing out as we move forward?
First of all, as far as the decision this week, I thought it was a no-brainer. Just, you know, the way he played last week, yes, he played, you know, below average in the second half, but the way he played in the first half, I thought he earned the start this week. And, you know, he's done a great job of managing the game and executing the game plan that Shermer has laid out for him. He's getting the ball in the playmaker's hands, and he's not turning the ball over except for, you know, late in the second half against the Redskins. That's where we saw, you know, the lowlights of Case Keenum. we saw the highlights of him in the first half. And, you know, like we always say, he's the ultimate wild card, and you don't really know what you're going to get out of Case Keenum. But to this point, it's been more good than bad, Case Keenum, and the team is winning. So he's been the recipe for success so far. And it seems like the team is willing to, you know, play with fire, so to speak. And, I mean, we don't know when the real Case Keenum is going to come back, or maybe this is the real Case Keenum with, you know, Shermer at the helms and, you know, leading the offense. So I think it's the right decision. And I hate using the saying, if it's not broke, don't fix it. Or whatever the saying is, I hate it. But, I mean, in this situation, I think it is kind of right simply because the team is 7-2 and they're rolling right now. So I think it was the right decision as far as going forward. I think this is basically a 2-game interview for Case as far as who the starter is going to be for the rest of the season. We all know he's going to start this week, and I'm assuming they're going to start him on the short week against Detroit as well, as long as he doesn't completely blow up against the Rams. But I don't expect that from him just because of, you know, how good he's played to this point. So I think these next 2 games are really auditioning for him to start the rest of the season.
Yeah, and before I swing it over to Saxy Prince here, you know, the if it ain't broke, don't fix it. And I also hate that expression. And I know a lot of people have tried to kind of go through it in different ways on Twitter and like use an analogy of a car if something's like not working in the car and all that other stuff. I just don't like it because it's lazy. If you want to say that Case Keenum should start, give some reasoning for why he should start. Just looking at wins and losses, that doesn't give you the whole story. It doesn't give you the context, because I think that if you're watching the games, we can say Case played really well in Tampa. Case played really well in the first half in Washington. He came in, he did well enough in Chicago to really, you know, help us, you know, salt that game away. But there was a lot of unevenness in the middle, right? And so, you know, they ain't broke, don't fix it. Especially if we're having a back and forth or a discussion or a conversation on Twitter about the whole thing, just saying if it ain't broke, don't fix it is lazy. It's not really a way to actually have a conversation where we jump in and talk about the football. It's a weak argument. And so that's why I hate it. I understand why the team made this decision, but I would hope that the reason that they made this decision went beyond just, you know, well, we won some games, because just winning games and QB wins isn't really a great way to evaluate, you know, especially the quarterback position overall. So yeah, I'm with you on that one, JR, that, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. That's it. It sets me off every time I see it, but I'm starting to learn now, trying to restrain myself from jumping into to every Twitter argument that's on there about that. I will let Alex and Yinka fight those battles on my behalf. So with that said,
we still young, Jason. We still young.
I gotta save my energy and fight with my 5 and 3-year-old. That's enough of the arguing that I can take with somebody who refuses to see reason while we're arguing. But with that said, you know, Saxy, I know that initially.
I know.
I thought you're definitely getting. Oh, you said no. You know, just a little lead in here. Just a little lead in. You know, because you know this game.
Set it up.
Home game, and I know you were really excited because it kind of was looking like this might be the spot where, you know, your man Teddy Bridgewater was coming back. I think you got yourself some tickets to the game. And you know, then, you know, the announcement comes out. And I think within 2 minutes, maybe, of the announcement coming out, Eric Thompson hit you with the, you know, the intervention cry gif on and it's a gif on this podcast anyway. On the Twitter.com. How disappointed are you that you're going to this game and you, in all likelihood, will not be seeing your boy Teddy Bridgewater take the field?
I mean, yeah, I'm going to be extremely disappointed. I think it would have been a fantastic game to get Teddy into home crowd. I think you would have heard lots of cheers, a standing ovation. I got lower level seats. I just think it would just would have been – the setting was perfect for Teddy Bridgewater comeback and really, you know, sell out the stadium type situation. You know, but that's not going to happen. I didn't sell my ticket and it's still going to go. I'm going to keep rooting for my team because at the end of the day, I do understand that we're 7-2. As far as the decision to start Case Keenum, I'm going to respectfully disagree with you both. I don't like the decision, not just because of Teddy, but I think it's incredibly short-sighted of them. I have to continue to harp on the fact that, you know, we do need to win games, and that's very important, and you don't want to if you see that you know, some things are working right, that's great. But I definitely feel like when it comes to, you know, I hate to keep hampering on that metaphor as far as, you know, it ain't broke, don't fix it. I do think that there's aspects of, you know, Case Keenum's game that I think that are very broke, and it's getting masked. The deficiencies are getting masked by, you know, Pat Shurmur and having two, honestly, stud top 12, 15 type wide receivers on your roster, that it's hiding a lot of your deficiencies. This is going to be the first real test that that the Vikings have had in a while, or probably even of the season. And excuse me, do I trust Case Keenum to be that guy behind, you know, under center? I don't. And you know, he has played well. At the Washington game, first 2.5 quarters, I admitted to myself, I think this guy probably will be the starter. At the end of the day, I think all that that Washington game did for me was say, hey, I know that he's playing well and all that stuff, but that's fine. That's good. Put him right back into the role that you brought him in for as the backup. Put Teddy in here, who, you know, for a fact, you've admitted it time and time again, this guy's our future. This guy's our franchise guy. We really want to know what we have in him. You need to start evaluating him now. And I'm not saying that you don't have to necessarily sacrifice the game in order to put him in. You know, put him in a situation, as Sherm has showed us, he's a genius. Put him in certain situations where you know that he can thrive in, and he can still win the football game. Because at the end of the day, as much as I want to win this Super Bowl, I want to win this Super Bowl and next year's Super Bowl and the Super Bowl after that. And that's why I felt like this decision was a little short-sighted. We're winning. We want to win now. That's great. But I just think that you need to also make certain decisions for your future at the same time. Like, both these things have to kind of happen in parallel. And I know that's hard because you want to lean towards one more than the other. But I do think that you need to stay the course in some of the plans that you have. And I think Zimmer kind of admitted to us in the media that, you know, his plan was to start Teddy, and he deviated from that for something that was a little bit short-sighted. So, I mean, I get it while he's starting, but, you know, I don't have to agree with it.
I'm going to say that sounds like hating Saxy Prince. Because like we said, when we were together the last time, I was going to work on, you know, some QB rankings and kind of figure out, you know, taking a composite look at some things, you know, bringing in, you know, DVOA, Pro Football Focus grades, QBR, total adjusted yards per play, adjusted net yards per attempt, and passer rating. Add some weightings on there and kind of take a look at who the, you know, top quarterbacks, and we won't say the top, you know, I guess maybe, you know, intangible or overall, like, actually skilled quarterbacks, but who's playing the best at this point, to this point in the season. And Case Keenum right now is ranked 6th overall in my quarterback rating. Right? So you mean, you said a lot of things there about, like, the long term. And when we started off, you did also kind of say that somebody is going to pay Case Keenum. And Miles kind of made this point a little bit in the last episode, and JR touched on it, so I'm gonna throw it to him kind of, you know, right after this. But if Case Keenum is in fact able to operate this offense at this level, based on, you know, Pat Shurmur calling plays, Stephon Diggs, Adam Thielen, improved offensive line, even though the offensive line, I don't think is improved as much as people think it is overall, but it's, you know, went from really bad with TJ Clemmings, you know, to middle of the pack, which is really all we needed it to be for the offense to function. If he's able to do all that, and we suspect that we'd be able to get him in there for, you know, kind of top end journeyman, low-end starter money. Why is that possibility of Case Keenum, who is only going to be 30? I mean, 30 at the quarterback position in the NFL now isn't old. Why isn't he someone that I guess we would be considering for the long term? And I guess the second question in that, and, you know, we'll start with JR and let you finish it out, Sexy Prince, is why hasn't Mike Zimmer named Case Keenum as the you know, the starter for the rest of the season, given the level of play that we're seeing. And yes, there are some warning signs in there, like Saxy Prince alluded to. You know, when you're looking at the Pro Football Focus, which is really the one part of this that gives context versus just telling you what happened, Case is a little bit lower in that one. You know, he's top 15 in all of the other metrics except for Pro Football Focus, where they do take into account those interceptable passes that get dropped and things like that. But why do you think, given how he's performing, that Zim hasn't just gone ahead and committed to him for the rest of this season and potentially maybe started negotiations for the longer term than that?
I mean, it's no secret. Like I tweet out all the time, they understand who their franchise quarterback is, or potentially franchise quarterback is of the future, and that's Teddy Bridgewater. They're going to give him every opportunity to prove himself once again, whether that's this season at some point or whether that's next season or preseason, whenever that may be. They're going to give Teddy a shot to prove to be that guy that they drafted in 2014 and made him a first-round pick. They're not just going to let him walk out the door. They spent so much time rehabbing him and helping him to get back on the field from this, you know, horrific knee injury. And I just don't see them letting him walk out the door being unproven and somebody else reaping the benefits off all their hard work they put into Teddy. I just don't see them letting another team just benefit from all the hard work they put into him and getting him back on the field. So at some point, they're going to want to see what Teddy Bridgewater is at this point. And, I mean, we know Mike Zimmer loves Teddy. He likes Case because he's winning games right now, but they understand what Case Keenum is. Yes, he can get better. And, I mean, he's shown he's gotten better to this point. But let's say Pat Shurmur does walk out the door. Will Case Keenum be that same guy, or will he regress back to that guy he once was pre-Minnesota? That's where I think there's a huge risk, you know, in signing Keenum long-term to be the guy, if that's what they so choose to do. And like I said, it's just playing with fire, man. It's at some point, I think a quarterback is what he is, and I'm not saying Keenum is that and he can't get better because he has gotten better to this point, but he's like a relief pitcher, man. He's just playing with fire. You don't know what Case Keenum is going to show up on Sundays. We all know the inevitable is going to happen at some point. Case Keenum is going to sneak up the joint and have a bad game at some point. We don't know when it's going to happen, but we just know. That's why I say you're playing with fire with Case Keenum, because he is a glorified backup quarterback. And I still believe that to this point. Yes, he has played better. He's gotten better to this point. Pat Shurmur has done a terrific job with him. But, I mean, he is what he is. And, I mean, that game is coming where we're just like, man, what the hell is he doing out there? So, I just think it's too much of a risk to sign Case Keenum to be the guy long term.
Okay. And obviously a lot of that makes, you know, that makes sense. But I guess the, you know, the flip side of that argument that you will get from folks is that, I mean, there's the risk of, I guess, maybe the unknown with Teddy Bridgewater. If you're evaluating them strictly as, you know, prospects, talent-wise, Teddy Bridgewater is or had shown himself to be a superior quarterback to Case Keenum before the injury. But Teddy Bridgewater, obviously, you know, situationally was in, you know, not the greatest place the last time he took the field. But Case Keenum right now, I mean, when you're looking across all these metrics, I mean, he's playing better than Aaron Rodgers was before he got hurt. He's doing better than, you know, Russell Wilson, Dak Prescott, Kirk Cousins. Like, we've also never seen Teddy Bridgewater play at the level or get the production, we'll say, that Case Keenum is getting right now. So I guess I understand from a prospect evaluation perspective, we would look and say that, you know, it should be, you know, Teddy Bridgewater because he's better. But I guess, how do you think the team is going through that exercise of weighing out, you guess, the bird in the hand versus maybe, you know, two in the bush with Teddy Bridgewater?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I'm not saying Teddy is that guy. He's not going to be that same guy he was pre-injury. I'm just saying they're going to give him a fair shake as far as proving himself once again. I just don't see them completely letting him walk out the door without ever playing the snap again for the Vikings. That's all I'm saying. I'm not saying Teddy Bridgewater is the Vikings quarterback of the future. I'm just saying he's going to get a fair shake to prove himself. We don't know when that is. Maybe the team wins a whole bunch of games and goes on a roll. And, you know, they clinch the division and get home field and they throw Teddy out there for the final game or the last two games, whenever that is. Or maybe we don't see Teddy again till next preseason. they give him a 1 year or 2 year prove it deal with a, you know, one year prove it option or 2 year deal. Like I said, a 1-1 deal is what I'm trying to say. So, I mean, I just don't know. We really don't know how this thing is going to turn out. I just know Bridgewater is going to get a fair shake. He's going to get a chance to prove himself. We just don't know exactly when that may be.
Okay. And Yinka, you know, I guess same question for you. Just ask it a little bit shorter than all the rambling I did there before JR. But why is Zimmer prolonging this quarterback decision, creating this, you know, kind of quarterback controversy, if you will? You know, if the team really and truly does believe in Case Keenum, why won't they just commit to him?
I think some of it has to do with some of the things that JR was saying. I think there is a level of we don't truly trust this guy to be the long-term guy. And I think they are really just waiting until he fails to have an excuse to put in Teddy Bridgewater. As far as this whole evaluation for Case Keenum versus Teddy, like Case Keenum has been playing well. I said it earlier, but he has been playing well. Like you can't take that away from him. I think the thing that I like to, when I'm kind of putting up the two of them against, 2015 was a really difficult season for Teddy. He was in an offense that wasn't catered to his strengths. He had Adrian Peterson, who limited the things that he could do. He's put in a lot of tough situations, had a poor offensive line. Mike Wallace was essentially told to spoon feed him. And then I try to think about like, okay, let's look at Case Keenum and how he's playing and stuff. Would Case Keenum have played this well in that offense? And more often than not, in my opinion, based on everything that I've seen on tape, I don't think Case Keenum would have survived that season, to be perfectly honest. So as you're evaluating, I think that's what Zim and Spielman and some of the guys who are making these decisions are having to say. It's, you know, can this guy weather through those horrible storms? And I think that's the reason why they kind of hold on to Teddy a little bit more, because they know he wasn't in an ideal situation. And, you know, trying to reinsert him, I think Zimmer is still maybe trying to protect Teddy. He is that conservative coach. He likes to, you know, he definitely likes to pound the football and stuff. But the addition of Shurmur has, I think it definitely has allowed Zimmer to kind of step away from the offense a little bit more. But, you know, if this is really kind of that, it's very clear this is a week-to-week thing, and I think that's a bad thing, spot to be in for this position that is so important. They should, if they really feel Case is the guy, they should have no problem committing to him for the rest of the season. And that's why I think this decision has been a little short-sighted, because if you're not willing to commit to this guy, then you need to give this other guy, who, yes, he is an unknown, but I think that unknown, the positives that you could get out of that unknown far outweigh any negatives you could get out of that unknown. Because any negatives you can get, you go right back to the guy that's performing well. So I don't know. I disagree. I guess I agree with JR as far as, you know, you take Pat Shurmur on, is Case Keenum going to perform? And then, you know, looking towards the future, I'm getting more inside the camp where any deal that I'm offering Teddy, if he does play and he plays at a decent or well level, I'm basically giving him a fifth-year option for any kind of contract extension type thing, with maybe a second year as far as the ability to opt out of that. I guess that's where I lean towards as far as I don't think the Vikings trust Case Keenum, and I mean, I kind of feel the same way.
Well, all right then. I feel like we've covered all the bases on this topic. So we're going to move on. Obviously, as JR said when we first got on the air here, you know, another day closer to game day. So, you know, marquee matchup that nobody would have predicted, Vikings, Rams, you know, home game for the Vikings here. And, you know, it's an interesting game because there's a lot of fun matchups to really look at here. I guess, JR, as you kind of looked at this game, look at this matchup, look at these teams, what are your thoughts on everything that we're about to see? And, you know, I guess, what are your thoughts on some of the key matchups that we really should be keeping an eye on when the game kicks off?
Very, very talented team. I think the Rams are by far the most well-rounded team that the Vikings have faced this far or so far this season, as far as in all three phases of the game. They have a lot of talent on both sides of the ball. Specifically, you know, their offense going from worst to first so far this season, averaging just below 33 points a game, which is very, very impressive considering the personnel that they had last year. So just seeing them, I think that's the first time. If they do finish with the number one ranked offense in the NFL, it would be the first time in NFL history having the worst offense and jumped up to the first offense in the following year. So just them being able to accomplish that feat would be tremendous. But I really like the Vikings matchups in this game. I think they have some holes up front along the offensive line, specifically on the interior. And we know Andrew Whitworth is a good player. He'll be matched up against Everson Griffin, who's coming off a foot injury. So that matchup would be very interesting to watch. But John Sullivan's having a good year, but I think they're having some issues at right guard. Jamon Brown is their starter there. So I think Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson can have their way with that interior, and they're going to have to push the pocket. And I think that's a big key for this week, just because the Rams like to get Jared Goff outside of the pocket. And what I mean by that is McVay likes to change the launch point with him. And Jared Goff's biggest weakness is interior pressure and pressure right in his face. So Linval Joseph and Tom Johnson really have to push the pocket this week and force Jared Goff to move outside of the pocket, because his passer rating falls tremendously when he has to escape the pocket, because he gets half feet back in the pocket a lot of times, and he's not very great when he has to change the launch point or move outside of the pocket. But as far as the weapons that they have on the perimeter, I think their wide receiving core is very good, headlined by Robert Woods and Sammy Watkins, who are two very good players. They haven't really been getting Sammy involved a lot this year. He's been more of a decoy that runs those deep post routes or deep go routes to clear it out for Robert Woods and, you know, Tavon Austin, and also Cooper Kupp underneath, who's been doing very good in the slot for them as well. A big staple of McVay's offense is running the screen game. He likes to get Ty Gurley involved, who is a very, very focal point of their offense. He does a very good job of incorporating Ty Gurley in the screen game and getting him involved and mixing it up with outside runs and inside runs. Gurley really likes to, you know, get it out on the perimeter with those outside zone runs. So tackling is going to be a big deal for the Vikings this week. Screens, that's going to be the biggest key for the Vikings defense this week. They have to recognize when McVay is going to run screens. And it's not just third and long situations. He likes to run them on first down and also second down as well. He likes to mix it up a lot. So tackling space is going to be a big key for the Vikings this week. Flipping on to the other side of the ball, the Rams defense, we all know, is headlined by Aaron Donald. And the Vikings interior offensive line is going to have to come to play. They're going to have to play their best game of the year. Aaron Donald and Michael Brockers are two very, very talented players on the interior. And I'm interested to see how exactly Shermer schemes around Aaron Donald. Does he use Donald's aggressiveness against him? You know, running quick hitting trap plays, midline, and things of that sort. So, and getting the ball out on the perimeter. I think they have to run away from Aaron Donald or figure out how to get the ball on the perimeter. And that's why I say that Jerick McKinnon has to be a focal point of this game plan, because they're really not going to be able to run the ball up the middle. I know the Rams are ranked like 24th or 25th run defense up the middle, but I still think they're very good up the middle. They've been getting better every single week, but the key to this game is getting the ball out on the perimeter. And also, I think Diggs and Thielen, whoever Tremaine Johnson is not guarding, I think they have to have a big game. Tremaine Johnson is a really good corner. He doesn't get a lot of due credit that he does deserve. So I think Diggs and Thielen have to have a good game, whoever's not getting guarded by Tremaine Johnson. I think that's going to be the key. So I like the matchup. I feel confident about this game, but it's going to take a complete team effort in order to beat this team, because the Rams are very good. They're legit at 7-2.
Yeah, and it's interesting that you called out Tremaine Johnson, because that was one of the players I was gonna actually ask you about, because he's someone has a lot of name recognition. But you know, looking at kind of Pro Football Focus and how they have him ranked year to date, they currently have him rated as excuse me, the worst of all the Rams corners. And so that's what I was going to ask you is, should we look for ways to, you know, isolate and attack him, given that it seems as though he's having a down year, not having gone and you know, broken down the film on him, as I'm sure you have. But yeah, I guess that was my question that I was going to ask there, is that, you know, it looks as though, like, from the Pro Football Focus kind of, you know, snap by snap data, it looks like he's having a bit of a down year. But I guess you're seeing it a different way in terms of, you know, basically we should just look to go the other way when he's on the field.
No, I mean, I haven't really keyed exactly in on him. I've been watching the defense as a whole, so I really haven't noticed how bad or how good he's really been playing. It was more based off name recognition, but I know he has been shadowing teams, other teams, top wide receivers. So I haven't really focused in on exactly what he was doing, but their secondary is average. They don't have a lot of notable names. I mean, we all know Nickel Robey Coleman just because we all wanted him in the offseason, but he's more of a nickel guy. They have a, you know, a decent young safety tandem in John Johnson and LaMarcus Joyner, who are both solid young prospects. So their secondary isn't overly great, and I think the Vikings can have their way with them. So it'll be interesting to see how Shermer schemes Diggs and Thielen open throughout the game. And if Tremaine Johnson does shadow, which guy does he shadow?
Yeah, and that's a great point. And the other thing that you mentioned in terms of from a Vikings perspective, you know, the Vikings really needing to get out there and tackle, you know, with the screen game. That looks like you said to be another area that we can exploit because, you know, as our friend Eric Eager said when he was on the Purple Podcast, and you know, something that I have noticed here as you start to do a little bit of research on this game, you know, Alec Ogletree is another guy with a name, you know, but he's playing really, really poorly when you look at the Pro Football Focus information. So, you know, getting, you know, McKinnon isolated on him could be a huge win for the Vikings as we go into this game. Saxy Prince, I guess, what are your thoughts on things? I know that you've just kind of started getting into the game preview for this one, but you know, what are you going to be looking at? What are the matchups you're really, really going to be, you know, focusing on as this game kicks off? And what do you think will be some of the keys for the Vikings to pull out this victory? Saxy Prince?
Oh, I didn't hear you say my name. I think it's actually going to boil down to, you know, JR touched on it, but some of the wide receiver and DB matchups, I think – as far as Xavier Rhodes, I think the best thing for him to do is maybe shadow Robert Woods. He's actually kind of exploded over, you know, the last couple of weeks, and I think that he's performed at a fairly high level, which obviously leaves Trey Waynes for Sammy Watkins. You know, I think we talked offline that, you know, he matches up pretty well, and I think I haven't seen as many down the field explosive plays from Sammy Watkins this season, which is kind of surprising. You know, he's an exceptional route runner, which I thought was going to be problematic for someone like Trey Waynes, who, you know, struggles with guys who run more crisp routes and whatnot. But Trey does a really good job keeping a lot of things in front of him, which I think also contributes to why he's such a good run stuffer. So, you know, you have him on Watkins, and then, you know, you probably put Mackenzie Alexander on Cooper Kupp. So you really limit the options as far as where Jared Goff is going to go with the ball, which that should help our interior guys, as well as Everson Griffin and Danielle Hunter, to really make life uncomfortable for Jared Goff. So I'm definitely looking at those key matches, what's happening in the trenches, as well as, you know, Trey Waynes able to do a really good job. I think he has, over the last couple of games, really stepped up, and you can kind of see his confidence level rising a little bit more. So yeah, I think that's where my attention is going to be for Sunday.
Awesome. And then JR, just another question for you here, because one of the things we have talked about a lot, and it kind of Yinka kind of brought it back to my memory here, is that, you know, we're talking about these matchups and, you know, who should we, you know, put on who and should we shadow. But when we're playing a team that, you know, likes to run as many screens as the Rams do, what kind of defense should we run? Should we be running a lot of man? Should we be running more zone? Like, really, what should we be doing in that, you know, defensive backfield to really, you know, counteract what it is that the Rams like to do on offense?
It's kind of tough. I think you really have to mix it up. And I think you have to have a mixture of both. Just because McVay is such a good play caller, you have to keep him off balance. You can't play man or zone the entire game just because he's going to see that. And this offensive staff is going to notice that as well. And, you know, teams like to use the first few series to get a feel for the game just to see how the defense is doing and what exactly they're doing. So Mike Zimmer has to do a really good job of, you know, mixing up his coverages and picking and choosing when he wants to run those double-A gap blitzes or a different type of man or zone blitzes, just because McVay times his screen passes so well, or his screen calls really well. And that's what you saw against the Texans last week as well. So he does a good job of picking and choosing when he wants to run those screen passes. So Zimmer has to do a really good job of timing when he wants to run those blitzes and not just third and long or, you know, certain situations where you can expect blitzes to come. So as long as he mixes up the coverages and the fronts as well, I think he'll be fine.
All right. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And then really the last thing that I wanted to get into with both of you here is, you know, Jared Goff, he's playing, or at least on the surface, when you look at kind of the outcome statistics, because he's another one very much like Case Keenum, you know, the traditional stats to kind of look at, you know, what happened after the fact, they love Jared Goff. I mean, he's having a very good season when you're looking at him, you know, across the board in terms of, you know, DVOA, he's middle of the road for QBR, but he's, you know, great in total adjusted yards per play, great in adjusted net yards per attempt, and doing great in passer rating this year. But I know that in the little bit that I've been able to watch him, you know, this season, as JR alluded to, he still does seem to have some of the negative tendencies that were there last year. Just McVay's doing a really good job with the system, getting the ball out of his hand, getting it to the playmakers, letting them, you know, go to work. What are your thoughts on kind of Jared Goff, the player, now as we've made it into season two? Where do you actually rate him on kind of where he's actually performing versus, or where he's producing versus what he actually is as a quarterback? Let me start with JR on that one.
I mean, I've only watched three games so far, but from what it seems like, it still seems like McVay is holding his hand a little bit. And what I mean by that is Goff in bad situations. He's not running long developing routes down the field. He's running, you know, those quick hitches, those quick slants, those quick outs on the perimeter, trying to get the ball in the playmaker's hands. And I think that's why he stacked the deck with a lot of receivers that can create out in space, and they can allow themselves to get that yak yardage, like a Sammy Watkins, a Cooper Kupp, and a Robert Woods as well. But when you ask them to go down the field or you want to take a shot down the field, they have the adequate speed to be able to do that. And that's what we saw with Robert Woods last week against the Texans with that 94-yard touchdown. So he's doing a good job of picking and choosing when he wants to take his shots down the field. But otherwise, you know, he's making the game very easy for Goff as far as running those screen passes or running those quick game concepts or those intermediate to short concepts as well. So he's still kind of holding Goff's hands, but he's scheming around his strengths. And that's why we're seeing a big difference in Jared Goff.
Yep, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And I guess, Saxy Prince, I guess, what are your thoughts? Because it is funny, Jared Goff and kind of his resurgence, a lot of what you're seeing there is very similar to kind of the conversation that we have had about Case Keenum. I guess, what are your thoughts on Jared Goff? When I, you know, did my rankings, I have him at kind of 12th overall. Like, what are your thoughts on him as a player? And I guess, what are you thinking we might do to try to rattle him or kind of push him into a bad game?
Yeah, I wanted to make this point before I get into that. I think I have to give my hats off to McVay, and actually I want the league to move towards doing or just hiring guys like McVay or just younger guys, because I think what we see in the NFL is sometimes we're running out of ideas because, you know, it's not a meritocracy, right? You're just hiring your buddies and your friends because you think they have good ideas, but we're not getting anything new and innovative. And you see how fast a team can turn around. You know, we've always heard about the rebuilding taking 3 or 4 years, and then we're ready to really take it. But look at what McVay has done. As far as Jared Goff, I was skeptical when they drafted him and what I've seen last year. But I think JR kind of hit the nail on the head is efficiency Jared Goff still has, I think, are kind of neutralized because of the fact that he's either getting the ball out quicker. He has a lot of skill position. He has a lot of players at the skill positions who, you know, can really, you know, make plays for him, essentially. And I think that's a credit to McVay. And it allows Jared Goff to continue to develop and grow and really understand how to read defenses and whatnot. I still think the Zimmer defense is the kind of defense that, you know, he hasn't really seen in his young career. And it is going to be a kind of defense that's going to rattle him. As you know, obviously the double A gap blitz, you know, some of those looks, as well as I really want to see one time in the game, like a corner blitz. I don't think I've seen that from a Zimmer defense in a while, if at all. So I'm, you know, whether it be Trey Waynes, who is, you know, really good off the edge, like I want to see something that's unique that Jared Goff is not expecting, because I think that's what it's going to take to really truly rattle him, is him start having him see things that, you know, he hasn't used to seeing. Because I just don't think his improvisational skills will lead the Rams to you know, positive yards or anything like that. So I think that's the best way I can describe is how to really truly just stop Jared Goff.
All right, well, we touched on a lot of things there. So I guess any of you guys have any final points you want to make on this matchup before we get to bold prediction, score prediction?
This is the best I felt about a game this season.
Wow.
That's kind of almost polar opposite for me.
So. I guess the next question is, are you actually going to pick the Vikings?
Yes.
Because that's actually going to happen? Yes. All right, well, let's go ahead and get that on tape. JR, what's your bold prediction and what's your score prediction?
31-20, Vikings. Jared Goff has a disaster of a day. 3 interceptions.
Wow. Is the 3 interceptions, that your bold prediction?
Yes, that's my bold prediction. I think Todd Gurley, I think he has a big day, though. Just because Jared Goff is struggling so much. They just start feeding Gurley a lot.
All right. And then, you know, we're going to ask you a bonus question on this one. So you have the Vikings winning big. How does Case Keenum play in this game?
I think he's typical Case Keenum. I think he comes out, he's fired up in the first half. And he plays well, but I think he comes down to earth in the second half and he kind of cools off. So I think he'll throw 2 touchdown passes and both of them will be in the first half.
All right. Like it, like it, like it. Saxy Prince, score prediction, bold prediction.
Well, I actually don't feel as confident in this game. And I'm like, again, I'm really not trying to be pessimistic about Case Keenum. But my bold prediction has to do with both Goff and Keenum. Both Goff and Keenum will combine for 5 turnovers in this game, whether it be interceptions or fumbles. And I'm not actually predicting a Vikings victory this Sunday. I think it's going to be somewhat of a low-scoring game. I'm going to say something around like 17-16 Rams.
Wow. That's a lot of hating in one segment from you right there, Prince. I mean, Vegas has this game as the 4th highest implied total of the week. And you out here just – so I guess when you go put your bets in, you're betting the under for sure, right?
Yeah, I think it'll still be a good game. Don't get me wrong. I just think that obviously with the turnovers, it's going to be like this – kind of back and forth ping pong match, and then, you know, maybe the Vikings are up really late and they, you know, you have a like some kind of a late field goal to kind of end things. But I do think both defenses are going to play so well against the opposing quarterbacks, where it's just, you know, it's really going to circle around the run game and you know, maybe some, you know, some late field goals and whatnot. So yeah, I'm going with the Rams, unfortunately.
Okay. All right, my bold prediction is that Danielle Hunter snatches one of those screen passes out of the air and runs it back for a touchdown in this game. And my score prediction for this one is 24-21 Vikings.
So I like it.
There it is. There it is. So before we wrap this thing on up.
Jason, who'd you go with? It broke up when.
Oh, yeah. I got 24-21 Vikings.
Okay.
And Danielle Hunter for the pick six, taking one of the screen passes to the house. All right. So before we get on out of here, JR, what you got, you know, on deck? What you working on these days?
Just watching film on these college prospects and adding it to the database. That's the biggest thing I'm doing right now, getting some grades and, you know, improving guys' grades and destroying some guys' grades. So that's what I've been working on the past few weeks.
Do you even have a life, man?
Yes, I do. Football. I'm a football guy like Mike Zimmer.
I feel you. I wonder if Mike's.
Yeah, JR. Some of us have like family and friends and other things that we do, and we don't have time to one time before we come out with a take on something. Anyways, what were you saying, JR?
JR was done, and so we'll. We can tell Yinka lives in Minnesota because he's, you know, coming strong with the passive aggressiveness right now. But, you know, Prince, what else, other than passive aggressiveness, what else you got cooking up over there? What you working on?
Y'all, I don't know if y'all saw on Twitter yesterday, I bought myself, got a laptop, you know, I needed to get, like, so my father is notorious for, you know, not really spending money on things. He likes to buy everything cheap and then have to fix it up and all that stuff, but that's caused so many problems growing up and whatnot. So I made it a point, you know, it's like, I need to go get a laptop. I just went out and bought myself a new MacBook Pro. So I'm going to actually have a lot more film breakdowns like I used to do last season or the season before that. Just kind of break down some film, kind of see some of the things that I enjoy and put some GIFs on Twitter.com. So I'm excited to do that again.
Very happy for you that you don't have to go and keep cutting those articles up at the library. But they're going to miss you, man. They're really going to miss
are.
You.
They are. Yvette, she was so great to me.
Your library card is still in your wallet.
It is. She would always have like a little plate of like cookies and milk and stuff because, you know, I'd be doing late nights and whatnot. But no more, man. No more.
Every time you say... your fictional or maybe not fictional librarian Yvette, I laugh because that's actually my mother-in-law's name. So every time you say that, I picture my mother-in-law, you know, unlocking the computer so Prince can go and write an article for us. But I think that's the end of this one here, you know, guys. And I guess I probably should have said this a bit earlier, but y'all, we made it to 50 episodes. So, you know, everybody out there who's been listening, big shout out to all of y'all. Thank you very much for your support. But yeah, who would have thought when we just randomly decided to take our group chats into a podcast that we'd actually stick with it for this long? So, we're at 50. Big shout out to our man who was, you know, doing his cross country tour, picked up the teddy shirt, and is you know, rolling around the country, rocking that right now. And to everybody else who's been listening and, you know, supporting us thus far, big shout out to all of y'all. Thank you so much. And, we'll try to keep pushing and get another 50 of these in before too long.
Can I say something that's not as passive aggressive?
I mean, you can say it. I might edit it out.
Okay. Anyways, you know, this is, you know, last year, I tried to get these guys to like do a podcast and whatnot. And, you know, they were like, yeah, we should do it. And then it just never happened. And then finally, I just stopped asking. And all of a sudden, I think it was either JR or Miles or somebody was just like, you know, guys, we should start doing a podcast. So, you know, it's been a great 50 episodes. I think it needs to be said that, you know, we are just a bunch of guys, avid fans. We love football. We love, you know, breaking it down. We love expressing our viewpoints and opinions. We love chatting with other fans and whatnot. And, you know, regardless of whether you watch a bunch of tape or not, or you're just a person who just likes to engage in just watching Vikings every single Sunday or whatever the day is, you know,
don't feel free to always hit us up. We're always willing to talk with you guys at really at any time. Hit us up in our DMs, all that stuff. So just wanted to give a little bit of appreciation to everybody out there. So
don't buy it, yo. Sexy Prince definitely thinks he's better than every one of you. It's definitely Yankee. He thinks he's better than all of y'all. I mean,
you can't be a prince and then just think that you're on the same level. I mean, yeah, it's like y'all haven't even seen Coming to America, man.
All right.
Well, we'll I would comment, but I'm a bully or a cheerleader, so it's all. Man,
that's true. It depends. It depends on the day of the week. It depends on the day of the week, or maybe the hour of the day. Who knows? Man. All right. Well, yo, fellas, it's been a blast doing these first 50 with you. We'll keep this thing moving, and yeah, we're gonna wrap it up. Have a good night, man.
Peace.